This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Well, welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. I have a huge treat for you guys tonight. Today, I am interviewing Ryan Bailey from the podcast So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey that you find on Betches. He basically dissects the good, the bad, and the ugly of anything going on in reality TV. He's a pop culture commentator, a former actor, a host, and he's an expert on anything that happens in the Bravo universe. He's a genuine fan of all the shows he watches and loves talking about them and connecting with others that love it too. I had the best conversation with him. I feel like this is going to be a little bit of a break from the kind of conversations we normally have, which are a little bit more serious, and we're focusing on a topic or a person who has felt misunderstood. But now we are getting into all things that you love in reality TV, from Love is Blind, Traitors, everything that's going on with the lawsuits happening, all the different reunions happening. And we get into some more interesting stuff about what we love on the streaming networks, like the Wendy Williams documentary or some other documentaries. Can't wait for you to hear this episode. You're going to love every minute of it. So if you also have not listened to Ryan's podcast, you basically need to start following him and subscribing to it. Now, again, it's So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey up next on Misunderstood. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me here today. It's been a long time coming.
Thank you for having me. Well, hello, Misunderstood Nation. Hello. Wow.
So I've been listening to your podcast for a long time now. You always have all the inside scoop as to what's going on. If you have listened to my podcast, you know I'm not so in the know with pop culture, although I have been part of pop culture. So
yeah,
it's always interesting to get someone else's take who is an expert on it, which I consider you. So again, thank you for joining us and filling my viewers in on everything that they're missing.
No, I think that's, by the way, you actually bring up something really interesting about being a part of pop culture. And that's like one of the biggest things in pop culture in the last 20 years is that it's not just TV and movies and music anymore. It's actual real life events that we've turned into pop culture. And I think that's very unique about the times that we live in.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into all that though, I realized when I mentioned your name to a couple of people, they were like, oh yeah, I love that podcast. And I was like, well, who is he? Tell me a bit about him. And no one really knew who the real Ryan Bailey was. So I just wanted to start with like, who are you? Who were you as a kid? Where were you born? What did you want to do? All those kind of questions.
Yeah, I was born in Columbus, Ohio, but mainly I grew up in Olathe, Kansas, because my dad was a salesman. So we moved there and then spent the rest of my time in like Paradise Valley, Arizona, where my dad still lives and my sister. But yeah, no, I was a nerd growing up. That's shocking to everybody, but I'm a straight dude that likes all this, that loves all of this stuff. I was never into sports. I was very, found it very hard to relate to other boys, but I could relate to women or girls really easy. And I was so much more fixated on what they loved than ever what guys loved. I found that very boring. You know, still to this day, it's hard for me to get through any kind of sporting event, even though I appreciate the fandom. And that grew into, you know, growing up in like Olathe, Kansas, it was a great place, to have an imagination I had a big imagination as a kid. I thought like being a superhero was like that could be actually a possible work option up until the age of 13. And I was one of those, like, I just consumed everything media related. And that was back before, you know, the internet. So it was like Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood, any magazine I could get my hand on, Variety, Hollywood Reporter. As a kid, I knew all of these things. I was obsessed with like box office figures, how much money a movie grossed overseas. And that's all like very weird. And then that like kind of led me to theater and doing like plays in junior high. And then we moved to Arizona and it was a much bigger high school and a much bigger platform to be able to do, you know, study theater. And I kind of did that. I just fell in love with movies, and pop culture was always this, not a secret shame, but it was not something that was ever really respected. And you could talk about it, and I would mainly talk about it with my guy friends, girlfriends, and now it's like their wives. And that would be the conversation I would want to have about what the Kardashians are up to, way more. And if I knew anything sporting, it would be like, oh, Tony Romo, that's the guy that dates Jessica Simpson. Like, I knew sports in that sense.
You could associate it with the pop culture phenomenon.
Yeah. So then it came to a point where I could have gone to grad school for theater. I chose to go to Los Angeles instead. And, you know, I've acted like, you know, very little parts in big things like The Office and How I Met Your Mother. I had big roles in really crappy Lifetime movies. I worked at an acting school for 13 years, like right up to the pandemic. But these things I always loved. This is like something I consumed, but I never thought I could do anything in this realm. I never thought I could be a talking head or a podcaster. I didn't even really know that what that was at one point. So this kind of started out of, you know, there's a little bit of the pandemic in this where that really is where this kind of started taking hold, where I would do just like 6 hour long podcasts where it would be kind of like my version of drive time radio, or, you know, like back in the old days, Stern would go like 5 hours a day. And I would just be in my room having a full-time job that I was trying to do online, but that was an acting studio. So it was really hard to coach actors online. And I just ended up talking about all the shows that I like so desperately loved. But the thing was that there's a huge audience out there that love the same exact thing. And it's that one of those things the show tries to lean into, all the things that, you know, people tell us we should be ashamed of. But in reality, you can actually learn more about humanity. You can learn more about yourself. There is such exciting things going on in pop culture. And like we even said at the very beginning, it has brushed up against the real world now, where true crime, you know, political events, those are now considered pop culture. So it's been really interesting to study. And at the same time, I'm just really goofy. I like to laugh. I like to be silly. And it has the show has provided me great solace. But me, myself, I don't know. I really don't think that there's anything that interesting about me in particular. What I think is so interesting is being able to talk about all of these shows. That to me is so interesting.
And it's interesting that you were able to create, you know, a paying job out of it, as opposed
to shocking, Rachel,
floundering and figure. No, but really, like, a lot of people try and figure out their purpose, or they're trying to figure out how they're going to make money to sustain their livelihood or whatever they want to do, you know? And I think you obviously have found your niche, don't you think?
Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, this is like, this every day I pinch myself. I mean, this is the hardest I've ever worked at anything in my life. But it's that old adage of like, you know, it doesn't feel like work if it's something you truly love. Right. But it is funny that every day I'm like, oh, wow, this is why I liked these things as a kid. It's actually paying off now. But like, you know, for people like you to, you know, when I got reached out even by you, I was like, oh, my God, it's fantastic. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I get to share a conversation with you. I mean, there are so many people like you guys. If you ever want to talk to fabulous people, start a podcast. You're going to be able to have conversations that you never thought you would be able to have. Because in my real life, I'm nervous. I don't like, I am very awkward in real life. But if you put a microphone on me, it becomes so much better for be able to communicate and listen.
Right. And also when you put a microphone in front of you and talk about content that you really innately know. It's not like you have to study it. You know, it just comes naturally to you, obviously. And that's what I found that I love too. I mean, I feel like for a long time, I really struggled with finding my purpose. And now that I have this podcast that truly, you know, is for people that have been reduced to a single headline and are on a mission to change their narrative or to cover topics that I feel like need to be, tested again or tried again, or people need to listen to them again and hear other sides because they're so used to hearing just one side or the narrative that the media gives. I think it's a really important place to be. And I love, like you said, having conversations with people that I'm interested in their story or I've read about, or people have read about me and they get to ask me questions. So it's really fun for me and I love it. And I wouldn't want to do anything else.
No, it is this kind of fabulous forum that I think we didn't have 20 years ago, and the sky's the limit. I mean, it really is. But also, you know, to your point, it's like I'll talk to a lot of Bravo celebrities, like a lot of housewives, reality stars. And sometimes what you realize through that process is, you know, normal, ordinary people are way less. Normal people to me sometimes are way more than reality stars. You realize that it's, wow, it's time and place.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed. So you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's in for 2024? Pickleball, eating healthier, and reading more. What's out? Lazy people, wasting money, and body odor. I think that's something we can all agree on. With Lumi Whole Body Deodorant, you get 72 hours of odor control everywhere from your pits to your feet, even your privates. And it's pH balanced and safe to use anywhere on your body. Lume was created 6 years ago by an OBGYN who was originally inspired by the concerns of her patients. And now this game-changing whole body deodorant is a savior to those looking to smell great and feel confident all day long. You can choose from a variety of scents like clean tangerine, lavender sage, or toasted coconut. And check out their reviews. I always do before I try a new product. And Lume has over 300,000 five-star reviews. Do you know how hard that is to get? You can't go wrong with that. And I'm so happy to tell you about this special offer. New customers get $5 off Lume's starter pack with code UNDERSTOOD at LumeDeodorant.com. So I received my package of Lume products, and I will tell you, my daughter stole all of them from my bathroom. They smell great. And smell is a big deal to me if you're going to be putting things on your body. So I can really tell you that they are doing well in my house. And my daughter is loving them and has asked me to order more. Lume's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice like mini body wash and deodorant wipes, and free shipping. As a special offer for listeners, new customers get $5 off a Lume starter pack with code UNDERSTOOD at LumeDeodorant.com. That's L-U-M-E deodorant.com. That equates to over 40% of your starter pack when you visit LumeDeodorant.com and use code UNDERSTOOD. Yeah, no, I agree. I talk to a lot of people that are ordinary people with extraordinary stories is how I word it. That, you know, because I started this only interviewing celebrities, but then I found out that there are so many people that have extraordinary paths that turned into something that is very relatable. You don't have to be, you know, an A-list star or a well-known name to have an issue or a situation that you've gone through or a feeling that's relatable. So that's why I like it. The one thing that is interesting, and I don't know that I love it. I mean, I studied journalism. I studied psychology and I minored in in communications. And then I went on to work at Bloomberg and work at CNBC and work at all sorts of different media stations. But nowadays with social media, you do not need to have any journalism credentials to be able to get on a microphone and command, you know, the room and say, this is fact and this is not, which becomes dangerous. So that's the one thing that I am very careful to remind people that, you know, when they say something, they should say it not with authority unless they are involved in the scandal or the topic at hand, you know?
Yeah. And that's why the show I do is not a show about like celebrity blinds. You know, I will say my opinion, I will speculate, but I'll always try to make it very obvious that I'm speculating on something. And that's just from studying patterns of behavior that we see in pop culture. But that is one of the biggest, I hate that element. And especially you see that a lot on TikTok, that now everybody's a pop culture historian and everybody is going after those clicks and views. So they will say some of the most insane things out there. And that's the frustrating thing, is trying to cut through that noise and be a voice that people can laugh with, but also people can trust to a degree, because it is so much easier to do something outrageous to get eyes on you. What is much harder is to actually try to tell some form of the truth.
Right. I wasn't going to bring this up till later, but now that we're talking about it and you're reminding me of this, people, you know, a lot of people get so invested in what they're watching on Bravo specifically and reality in with these Bravo stars. So I just want to talk about what happened with Scandoval for 1 second, because it's still such, you know, Vanderpump Rules is on and it's such a big deal, but that translated into the fact that everyone in the world was talking about it that didn't even know, that didn't watch that show. And then, you know, it's like the New York Times is writing about it and it's becoming such a serious conversation, you know, that people are so heavily invested on, and the level of anger, people taking one side versus the other. And, you know, and especially like when we get into like seeing the reunion and the level of verbal assaults and vengeance that they have for one or two people, to the fact that now we have lawsuits going on, you know, it becomes a much bigger thing, and people forget that these are real people in real scenarios, not just a TV show. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, that's the kind of the trade-off, the devil's bargain, if you will, in signing up for a reality show, is that most of the time it's going to be okay. But if you happen to do something, you have to understand that's going to be part of that reality show. And that was like right place, right time, in terms of the explosion of it. But he did something so horrific that a lot of people have been a part of. Somebody's always been cheated on or have cheated on somebody. The lies that were involved in this. And this is over 10 seasons of a show. So we felt like we know this person. Right. So this is how the parasocial relationship works on these shows, is that we felt like we really knew this person and believed in them.
And
so
we were betrayed.
Yeah. Well, reality shows, unlike any other form of entertainment, depends on second screen technology. It depends on our anger. It depends on our excitement. Like it thrives on our anger and excitement. It counts on us tweeting about it or making Instagram memes, or it needs that to survive. So this kind of had all of those elements, and it was like an apocalypse. I believe this is what reality television was working its way up to. But it is ridiculous when sometimes at the end of the day, we're a year into Scandoval, and the New York Times just did the article on Tom Sandoval. It was part of their daily podcast. And you're like, I don't know at the end of the day if you're going to get much more out of this. You're just actually now commenting on the scandal itself and the insanity of the tornado that followed. When in the end, it's like the foundation with which this was built on cannot handle this much discourse, if that makes sense.
It does. But didn't you think, you know, I looked at it as like, listen, I was in that real life version without the cameras following.
Yeah. Right?
I became the villain. I was the mistress. I was the one that everyone was after, the weapon of mass destruction, the monster in the story. And I watched that unfold with Rachel. I saw the whole world, you know, the whole nation's reaction to, I'm going to get her name wrong. Adriana.
Ariana. Yeah. And Raquel.
Ariana. Okay. Cause I don't really watch it, but I saw the reaction to her. They put her on a pedestal. She got all these endorsements and TV deals and this, that, and the other thing. She became the hero. And then he kind of was down the middle. They could take him or leave him. They were obviously angry at him, thought he was a total jerk, but at the same time, he was offered back on the show with a lot of money. You know, he was part of this whole thing, and he kind of got off He didn't get off scot-free, but compared to Rachel, he did. And Rachel, smartly enough, I was actually shocked she did not take another season, because I thought, how would she clear her name? She needed that platform to have her say. I didn't realize that she's, you know, that was a very smart move, because she obviously was so devastated by what happened that she could not be part of that anymore and couldn't handle that kind of scrutiny. Now, I will say, I've had that scrutiny. I've also had to, years later, and I'm talking 10 years later, I had to check myself into the same place she went. I went to the Meadows in Wickenburg, Arizona. I don't have a drug abuse problem. I don't have an alcohol abuse problem. I went for post-traumatic stress disorder, for feeling so misunderstood, so lost, not being able to get my footing 10 years later. It was devastating. I had closed a business that I had started. I lost my identity. But like, people were coming into my store being like, aren't you Tiger Woods, Rachel, you could tell?
Yeah.
Like, it was terrible. And I needed to get away. That, and also dealing with the fact that I lost my father at a young age, losing my fiance on September 11th. I was just like, done. I needed to have a conversation. And I realized that that was very good for her. But I watched people's reaction towards her. Listen, I don't condone that she cheated. Obviously, that's a terrible thing. I will say people's reaction was so awful. And I was shocked she didn't kill herself. I mean, it takes a really strong person to have to listen to those things, think you're never going to come up for air, that no one will ever trust you again. You'll have that stigma. I thought it was terrible. I thought it was terrible how she was treated. And then I thought it's terrible now that people are like, oh, I was really tough on her. I was dealing with my own thing, so I shouldn't have acted that way. But let's move on, because I'm getting paid another couple $100,000 to be on the season. I was like, what? I think it's awful. I really do.
But like you said, that's how life works, unfortunately. And that's one of the trade-offs. You didn't have that trade-off necessarily. That was very real life. You were not on a reality show. She was. And she also knew that forum that she was playing in. And that's one of those things is that, like, I keep talking about the trade-off. When you are after fame in some way, that's usually not going to lead to great things in the end. She was a 28-year-old woman, and that is another thing. She was young. This is a 40-year-old man. There is a power dynamic that is wild to begin with, but they also tried to hide it. This would not have come out the way it did if it wasn't, you know, Ariana found the phone with the video outside of filming. And then they pick back up cameras, but that's what the show is there to do, is to film their reality, good or bad. And I always call it like having the hot potato. Who has the hot potato this season? It was just that this hot potato was the hottest potato that you've ever felt in your life. And Tom Sandoval, like, this is where I will give Rachel so much credit. She did check herself into a facility. She prioritized her mental health. Most reality stars don't. And I think that's why Tom Sandoval is still getting the negative attention that he's getting, because he just wants the craving of fame seems to overtake any conversation in regards to real mental health with him, where Rachel prioritized that. And I thought, okay, this actually is somebody that is really interested in living an entire life after reality TV. I'm a little confused now, though, once the lawsuit kicked in, Bethany Frankel got involved. That was the part where I was like, are you craving a normal life, or are you still craving some form of spotlight? You just didn't want to go back into that pit of people.
Well, I'll give you my opinion on that. I think the thing with Bethany is I'm assuming she went after her heart, being like, listen, I'm the platform to do this in. I'm the person to do this with. And knowing, again, from experience, you want to tell your story and your side so bad. I mean, when everyone hates you, it is so hard to not be verbal about it, to not vocalize it. And so many people wanted her to apologize and be this person that, you know, just was, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. But there's also a level of, wait a minute, you didn't know what I was told. You didn't know what, you know, let me just tell you my side. And if you choose to like me, I hate me after that, no problem, but let me just get it out. And I really feel like there was something, the reason why she did that podcast is she was convinced by Bethany that that was the right way to do it in. I think, you know, backfired in some ways. And then listen, I'm friends. I love Mark Garagos. I think he's great. I just texted back and forth with him this
morning. Friedman and Mark Garagos, powerhouse attorneys that are repping all of these people.
I will tell you something about Mark. Mark is a serious dude. He's not a reality dude. he, you know, I just had him on my show a couple of weeks ago. We didn't talk about this nonsense. We talked we talked about the real stuff. We talked about whether or not the Menendez brothers are getting a new trial. We talked about Scott Peterson and the fact that he, you know, wants a new trial. We talked about all these different things, the Idaho murders, and if that guy has a real case to get off. Like, that is Mark Yarragos. That's quintessential Mark Yarragos. Mark would not take this case unless he thought there was something to it. He's not a reality dude, you know? So I think that Rachel has a case, and I think it's bullshit to say, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, Tom's more in trouble because he taped her. I'm sorry. If my boyfriend was cheating on me and I saw it on his phone and I sent it to myself, you think I wouldn't show it to everyone? You think I wouldn't be like, look at what this fucking hoe did?
Well,
she showed it to people.
And I think everybody would do that thing where they would send it to themselves. I think that is, and they're requesting a jury trial for this, which I think is interesting and potentially a little troubling for Rachel's side, because I think a jury, that's where you would actually be able to pull emotional heartstrings, or people would be able to relate. And I think they would relate to Ariana in that situation more than that. But Rachel, the other thing is, like, already you have been more empathetic and open in this conversation than Bethany was in that conversation with Rachel on her podcast. Mm-hmm. And that was my thing, was the frustration about reality reckoning as a whole. And for your audience that doesn't know, is that Bethany kind of started this thing called Reality Reckoning. And under what, you know, she says, better working conditions, better pay structure, better mental health, which I am completely for. But there always seems to be a little bit of this self-serving vibe with Bethany. And when I listened to that three-part podcast, which she heavily monetized, she'd never even seemed to really truly want her actual story. Like, you're already asking questions of like, well, this is how I feel, this is how I think, which already I'm like, well, you should have interviewed her, because I walked away from that three-part thing still not knowing Rachel's story. Rachel has a podcast right now that I found out more about her in this situation than I ever did in that interview. I just got worried about somebody like Rachel, that she's once again being used by somebody that is just like Tom. Tom used her, and now Bethany's potentially using her. I don't know. But by the way, I'm geeking out that you talked to Mark Yarragos. Like, I can't wait to listen to that. And by the way, for all you listening, I'm no Mark Yarragos, so I am sorry. Like, go listen to that one right now. My God.
No, we're talking about super interesting stuff with you. Okay, wait. So I actually, and before we go off that topic, I just want to say about Monica Garcia, because she's another one that people loved to hate at the end there and is now apparently not coming back. So, like, don't you think that's odd that, like, the villain isn't coming back? Didn't that kind of make the
100%.
Show? I never watched Salt Lake City until that happened. I thought it was great. I want to see her come back.
I was so bummed out, and especially because I think in any good story, you need conflict. We have conflict right here. She was found, you guys, to be running an Instagram burner account, making fun of all of these housewives, particularly Jen Shah, who is now in prison. Because Jen Shah, at the end of the day, nobody can argue, she was a horrible person to a lot of people, and she stole money from the elderly, period. She's in prison. So I have no problem with making fun of Jen Shah. But these other ladies thought they were making fun of them as well. So it became this weird clique. And I will say, there's a lot of questions I still have in regards to Monica Garcia, but I would have loved to have had those answered on the next season.
Yeah.
Also, you know, reality shows aren't about a bunch of good people. Nobody should be taking their social or moral cues from these ladies. That's a fallacy if we look into these shows as a way to treat people. No, this should be a guidebook on how you do not treat people and a guidebook on what you shouldn't do. And they're just better dressed than all of us. So I think it is a missed opportunity. And I think you'll also see at some point she will come back to the show. At some point. And by the way, the Rachel thing as well. I thought if that lawsuit didn't happen, she would have eventually come back for season 12 when she was stronger, more of a sense of herself and what she did. And, you know, I don't think obviously that opportunity will not happen any longer.
Right, right. Speaking of well-dressed, do you think that all these reunions have now sort of jumped the shark in terms of, like, no one's really caring what we're listening to on the reunions, but it's all about the looks? I mean, it's gotten crazy. Have you been watching Beverly Hills? What was Dorit wearing?
She was wearing this. I mean, it was, I always call it, it's like a slutty Mother Teresa. It's like this red cape look that took like 2 hours to put on.
But supposedly, they were like, what are you going for? And she's like, fashion, fashion, fashion. I'm like, what?
But Rachel, that's the silliness that I love. The insanity, because you can tell they really firmly believe in what they're wearing and what they're doing. And that sort of seriousness is always so funny to me. And that's part of the reason why I love these shows. But also, I'm a dude that shops at Old Navy. Like, I don't, fashion is such a huge blind spot for me that, like, I will listen to other people speak about it and they're like, oh my God, it was divine what she was wearing. And I have no language for that. So I'm like, yeah, man, they put on pants. It looks good. Awesome. let's get to talking about the show. But I mean, you take that. That's like a,
but if you had a, if you were dating a girl and asked her to join you at a black tie event and she showed up in that dress, would you be like, oh, you look divine?
I would say fashion, fashion, fashion. I would be a little weirded out. Listen, Selling Sunset on Netflix took it to like, they look like the X-Men. Like, these people are dressing up full. If you went and got like a showing of a house by somebody dressed like one of the X-Men, you'd freak out. Like, it has gone way over the top.
Well, also, if my husband was being showed a house by one of the, like Emma, I'd be like, yeah, no shot. We're out of here. We're leaving. Sorry.
No way. I mean, like, it is wild what they, So, but the whole ecosystem of housewives and reality shows, it's gotten so much more insane because now, of course, we've got new lawsuits coming out every week. So it's not just the show anymore. I always call it a 360 experience. And that's the thing that can be all consuming. And that's why I think there is so much vitriol and anger out there on social media, because it's not just the show anymore. They all have their own podcasts. We got to read the Daily Mail, the TMZ. You got to cut through the bullshit with the rumors. We got to listen to your podcast. You got to listen to my podcast. We got to look at the memes. We got to see all. It's not just one thing anymore. It's like, like, it's all like the Da Vinci Code. You're cracking codes. People are like studying law now. It's not back in the old days when you would just pop on an episode of The Real World and then drink a vodka Red Bull and call it a day. Like, this is totally different. And I do wonder sometimes, it's like a Thunderdome mentality where does this end? And you mentioned earlier that you just really do hope nobody hurts themselves. And that's why at this point, I think mental health care professionals should be on set, you know, like should be, if you're having an intense conversation, there should be somebody that you can actually talk to make some noise. Because think about our own lives, you guys, we're all such pain all the time. Imagine then having to share that with potentially millions of people. I mean, that's scary.
Yeah. And not only that, everybody comes up to you thinking that they know you, right? Because you're in their living room once a week and they love you or hate you or have an opinion. And it's really hard to step out of that, go to the supermarket and someone's like talking to you from the last episode, like they're friends. And I think that's really hard. And also something you brought up, you know, in the old days when we used to watch movies or, you know, these big actors that we would die to meet, right? We don't know anything about their personal life. We just know who Julia Roberts was in the movie. And like, that's who we fell in love with. But, you know, now reality stars are almost bigger than these big time actors. I mean, people flip out, cry, go nuts, have BravoCon and follow their every move down to who they're divorcing, marrying, sleeping with, their babies. I mean, it's just what they eat. It's like insane. So,
well, no, you're right. We talk about this all the time on the show. It's like I the death of the movie star and the rise of the reality star slash influencer. Yeah. And it's really sad to me in some ways, because as a kid growing up, and this is just, you know, by the way, you know, kids these days don't really care, but there was something so romantic about following a celebrity's life, about potentially having it be aspirational, like what could be going on behind closed doors, because we didn't have 24/7 access like we do now. Right. And celebrities, a lot, like there was a lot of mystery about them. There is no more mystery. It is just like an anvil hitting your head 24/7 with pop culture celebrity news. And there used to be a day, there used to be a time where I wish we could sometimes go back to, where you would wonder what a celebrity was doing. Like when Jennifer Aniston was married to Brad Pitt, what's going on? What are they like behind the scenes?
Yeah, like how did that happen? Yeah. I mean, listen, I'll go back to even when I was little and seeing your art teacher or your PE teacher out of school, you were like,
What? Oh yes. My God, are they a real person?
They're real people. Yes, exactly.
And getting like sweaty about talking to them. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
it's weird that cultural shift that has happened. And I, you know, sometimes that's why I don't think movies really have the punch that they used to, because our attention spans are shit now. I mean, my niece and nephew are kids and I'm like, what movies do you like? They're like, we don't really watch movies. We do the computer and this and that. And I'm like, wow, this is an art form that could potentially, it'll never die, but it's just the power that has been taken away because reality stars and influencers have taken their place. I mean, streamers, all of this stuff. And it is so much to keep up with. And that's the other thing. You need to find those voices that can cut through that noise. And there's so many just amazing stories that we have access to. But sometimes it can be a little bit too much and you forget to actually live your own life and to have a little gas in your tank. So when you watch these things, you can come at it from a human level.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's get into a couple things that, like, we've been talking about already, though. Okay. So one of the things in the news that we've all been looking at is Larsa and Marcus. They split, then they got back together. Now we're on the reunion. By the way, I like her. I think she's funny. I haven't watched Miami until this season. I don't think it's like the best show, but I don't mind it. But the only thing I cared about was whether or not she was with him and whether or not they're really getting married. What are your thoughts on this whole
show? Liz, I think they're definitely together. I mean, they seem consumed with each other on this this season of Miami. He was gone for like 4 days and she threw him a coming home party. The obvious thing, though, is the Michael Jordan relationship of it all.
Yeah.
And Larsa, we're in the reunion of Miami right now. And it's so funny. Larsa, one of her innate talents is to act like she doesn't understand the obvious. Like the thing of the, like at the end of the day, she is with Michael Jordan's son. Michael Jordan played with Scottie Pippen on the legendary Bulls. I mean, they are legends in sports. Even I know that, a non-sports fan. And the fact that she is dating Michael Jordan's son, that's insanity, no matter how you cut it.
Wait, but is it clear that she's ever met Michael Jordan in a scenario where she was Scottie's wife? Like, have they hung out?
Yes, that is clear. She says she did not meet, because I was presuming that she also met the sons at a very young age.
Right.
She says she did not.
Okay.
But Michael Jordan also has kind of gone on record saying she does not, he does not approve of this relationship.
Yeah.
That's come up on the show. And also what they did around Super Bowl time was that there was an online kerfluffle where they might have broken up because Larsa did that thing where she like did a poll of like, should your friends unfollow your ex? And then all of a sudden people, you know, Facebook detectives and Instagram detectives realized they, you know, that Larsa unfollowed Marcus, Marcus unfollowed Larsa. We found out Marcus was watching the Super Bowl with his dad and posted an Instagram story of them together. And we were like, oh my God, they broke up. And then later that week, they were then at a, you know, paparazzi caught them on Valentine's Day with roses and gifts, and they might have gotten back together. We still don't know what that story is. There's potential that she might have just, it might have just been a made up thing for attention. And that's the other thing too, in the attention economy, you find reality stars and celebrities in general doing crazy things now. Like, you know, really, you know, betting their entire lives and relationships on attention. And I think that is sad, any way you cut it. But Larsa is, she's fascinating in so many ways because she's a fascinating reality show character.
I thought she may have given him an ultimatum. Then he came back and said, I can't live without sex 5 times a night. No one's ever going to do that with me. First of all, wait, as a straight man.
I'm sorry, Rachel. That's a flat out lie. She is not having sex 5 times a night. Okay, and I'm sorry. She's just not. It's not happening.
Okay. But as a straight man, I want to know, is that a reason that you're not dating anyone else? Like, are you like, that's my girl, 'cause she fucks me 5 times a night.
That's so ridiculous. I love that everybody like, I mean, I love that we come at it like 15-year-olds, because that's the only time that you sometimes think five times a night sex. Like if you're 15, you're like, if there's some day that I can have sex 5 times a night, I've hit the jackpot. And then you get older and you're like, 5 times a night. Are you kidding me? I've got TV to watch. I think it's one of those things that's like a baller thing to say, like, look what I do. But I just don't see in any reality that being true. And if it is true, I don't see, like, maybe once in a blue moon, maybe for special occasions, a five-time-a-nighter. But that's the great thing about Larsa, is that she makes these outlandish declarations and kind of leaves us wondering, like, that she's essentially still a mystery.
Right, right. By the way, can we just clear up one wives' tale that I have with men? And I think this is a service announcement for all women. Women do not think it's cool when men go for hours. Like, I know you guys think, like, I can fuck her all night long. No, no, no. Like, 20 minutes is the limit. I'm done. I've got shit to do. I want to relax. It's too taxing. And also, I mean, it's like they want to make you come. And then as soon as you come, they're like, I want to make you come again. That's not how that works either. Okay.
This is where we're poisoned with pop culture, Rachel, because we grew up, and like, I remember specifically as a kid reading an article with Sting, the music artist Sting, where he practiced the Kama Sutra with his wife Trudy. And I remember reading that they would go 6 to 7 hour lovemaking sessions. And I remember as a kid going, that's how it's supposed to go. And we're poisoned by all of this pop culture where you do see those things of like, let's go again, let's go again. That is not the reality of those situations. And I think people, that should be like the real birds and the bees talks of not listen to anything out there in pop culture in terms of sex.
Right. Okay. Let's move on quickly to another reunion, Beverly Hills. Okay. They keep teasing that, you know, there's going to be a big thing that happens at the end. Obviously we see Sutton has a major health scare or whatever. Yeah. But I'm wondering, is Kyle ever going to admit whether or not she's become a late in life lesbian?
You know, every time I think she's like, she always like, it's like one of those, like she's edging the audience. Like she steps up to the precipice and then she'll do an interview where she'll be like, no, it's just friends. Like we even had video of her at Watch What Happens Live, Andy Cohen's show a couple weeks ago, where Morgan Wade, the country singer that she is allegedly, you know, best friends with, had her hand on her hip, a very familiar place. Like if you watch the video, you guys, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. But like, you don't do that with friends. It's a very familiar area. Mm-hmm. If I did that to any of my girlfriends or guy friends, you would assume that we've seen each other naked at some point. And the Kyle of it all, Kyle is been on reality television since the beginning of Beverly Hills, 13 seasons of this show. She is not like inherently bad in any way, but she's also known for not sharing certain aspects of her life and protecting those very, you know, very dearly. And I understand that with a family, but it's obvious that something is going on. I do not think we are going to get the announcement like a lot of people expect. I don't think on the third part of the reunion, she's going to be like, by the way, I'm gay. I don't think so.
We're not going to get a Chriselle. Chriselle type of situation where Chriselle from Sunset, what was it? She all of a sudden.
Oh, Selling Sunset, where she with G Flip. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
that was crazy. I mean, by the way,
I think it's one of those slow burn things where she's getting us so used to the idea. And I also think there's an element of when you do remember that these are real people, she has a bunch of daughters. She's got to make sure that they're comfortable first. Of course, that's not what the reality show audience was, because we are, like I said, Thunderdome. We want it now. We think we've uncovered a mystery, when in reality, it could just be, it's something that's so very personal and a, such a big change that she wants to make sure everybody in her life is okay, not okay with it, but it knows about it before we do.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Something I want to talk about that just came out in the last 24 hours, Sister Wives, the son, Garrison, just died apparently of a gunshot wound. Janelle and Cody's, one of their son, terrible. Did you watch the show? Do you know anything about this family?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's Janelle and Cody's son. And if you watch Sister Wives, Cody, he now is down to one wife. It started off with four and now he's down to one. So, you know, turns out plural marriage might not work. But this man is... if you watch the show, he seems like your pattern narcissist. It's all, you know, everything's done to him. He is not responsible for anything. But we watched how he, you know, treated his sons through the pandemic and COVID, and he had very strict rules about that. So he did not have a lot of contact. And there were like big arguments about this. And you saw those sons struggling. And this seems like a really sweet kid. But this is the thing, is that this is a very real event that happened, you know, taking somebody's life. His brother found him, and your heart goes out to Janelle. She seems like such an amazing woman. But I think that's why we're drawn to those shows, is because this is something like I have no language in plural marriage. Like this is something new to me. And that's what reality shows can sometimes do is show you, you know, this, wow, plural marriage I get to learn about. And then you realize, oh, there's commonalities that we all share. Or even like Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I'm not rich, but there's commonalities that we share. Sister Wives, you saw a lot of commonalities, but you just saw at the end of the day, Cody was a huge jerk. And I talked about this on my show today. And I said, listen, now's not the time for me to like actually express how I feel about Cody and where I think he was potentially, you know, that his behavior plays into this because I know he's grieving as well, but it just breaks your heart. It's so real that I sometimes things like this happen and it's just horrible any way you cut it. But he was a real sweet kid. You know, he was in our military. And I just, it's one of those things that, it really bummed me out yesterday. Like it kind of floored me. Like you'll talk about like cheating and lies and all the normal reality show stuff, but this happened. And, it really, I think we've all been touched in our lives by somebody who has had suicidal ideation or actually taken their own lives. And it's very, very sad to me.
And it just reminds you that, you know, you may interact with somebody and really not know what's going on within them and what they're dealing with.
Oh God.
People might think, oh yeah, it's because Cody treated him so bad. It might not have anything to do with the way he was brought up. It could have been something that happened in the military. It could have been something with a girl, with a guy, who knows. But either way, the point is that everyone is suffering in their own mind. Whether or not they get to the point of wanting to commit suicide is a whole nother thing and how they deal with it. But everyone suffers. And you just got to be kinder. And it also shows you that even though you're on a TV or your family's famous, you know, it doesn't make anything any better.
Rachel, you shared it even earlier about, you know, at one point going to that same facility that Raquel went to, you know, like there are these things that you have to be honest with yourself. And we can get ourselves into these moments that we can't get out of. And sometimes you just need to be able to hang on. And that's why I always talk about like, I life is so damn hard, you know, and this stuff is supposed to be escapism for us. And you want it to add to your life, not take away from, but it is really, really hard out there. And we all go through this at a certain point. And that's why I just encourage anybody to be able to talk to somebody. Like I am so guilty of this myself, where I've been in really dark moments in my life. I think I'm in one in this last year. And it's really one of those daily reminders to not just communicate into a microphone, but communicate to real people in your life that care about you, because you don't want, you know, like when you're up at night, 3 a.m. editing a podcast, it can be a really isolating, dark place sometimes. Yeah. And you can just be talking about the same shit over and over again. And you see the same patterns in social media, reality TV, pop culture. And, you know, you gotta take care of yourself.
And that's a really important word you use, isolation, because I think when people get into a bad position, they think no one is going to understand them. No one's going to want to hear it. Everyone has their own problems. And no, it's really important to not isolate, to talk to someone and to feel understood and heard. And I know that first step is super hard, but that is what you have to do, reach out to someone. I'm very lucky. I actually have Mary coming on my show in a week. So I'll have to obviously get her thoughts on this, but just she's a really interesting woman to me because she did choose to leave, and you know, she's a really strong woman. So she's actually coming to Florida. We're going to meet in person and do it here, so I'm really excited.
Rachel, what the heck? Look at the book. Once again, who am I? You got Mary, you got Mark Garagos. This is like, this is incredible. Like I'm literally going to get off with you and get on the phone with my booker and go, what the heck is going on?
I have another spoiler alert. I have Kathy Griffin next week. So,
okay. I got to let you go now. This is ridiculous. You just came to make fun of me now.
The point is you're in good company. You're in good company. Okay. So next thing I want to talk to you about, last night, I watched four parts of the Wendy Williams documentary on Lifetime. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Okay. For our listeners, I have to say, I couldn't stop watching it, but it was so painful to watch. Parts of it were very cringeworthy. Parts of it were very upsetting. I could not believe the demise. And I want to start by saying I was on her show. So I don't know if you know this, but she interviewed me maybe 2 years ago, kind of right before she left. I was on her show for maybe 12 minutes. And this was when I was, I had been hired by Seeking Arrangement to stigmatize what Seeking Arrangement, the largest dating site, was. And the whole point of it was that, you know, 22 million people are on that site, but no one wants to admit that they're on it. Right. And so she heard about this because it obviously was in the paper. People were trying to shame me for it. And I was like, what are you talking about? What's the big deal? They're paying me $20,000 a month. And I believe in it. I believe that you should take the stigma out of it, ask for what you want. And every type of a relationship is an arrangement in some way, shape, or form. Anyway, she called me and asked me to be on the show. So I go on the show. And she was very odd. It was a very odd interaction. She had teased it that she wanted to sign up for Seeking Arrangement. She wanted to get a sugar daddy or be a sugar mama. And blah, blah, blah. So she wanted to ask me all about it. And 10 minutes out of the 12, she gave me a hard time about the scandal that I was in. And she seemed kind of out of it. And there was like all these articles after the fact, like, Wendy owes Rachel an apology. Thank God they said Rachel handles herself so well, but it's like live. So live to a taped audience or live audience.
How did you feel in that moment?
You know, I grew up liking Wendy. So yeah.
She's a legend.
Yeah, she is she's an icon. So I was hurt, frankly, that she took that opportunity to dig at me about that. But I did know that she came at me because of her own personal experience. Her husband had cheated on her, left, you know, had another kid with someone else. But I also thought it almost seemed to me that she wasn't prepared for the interview, that she had been in a state of feeling like she's done this so long. Don't talk to me about how to interview my guests, and had just known my name from the headlines 10 years before and was talking to me about something that really wasn't relevant anymore. And so it felt like an unprepared road she went down. And so it seemed odd. But anyways, that is my memory of being on her show, unfortunately. But I knew something was up. And so it didn't surprise me that, you know, that what I heard later. And then a friend of mine, Mario Lopez, and I share this friend, this mutual friend who was set up on a date with her. And she went out with him for a couple of weeks. I think Mario set her up. And that didn't end very well either.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my 6 degrees.
But by the way, Rachel, that's like getting roasted by Rickles. To have an experience with Wendy, even a negative one, you look back and you know,
I feel
like
good about it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you survived it. I survived Wendy Williams. The docuseries, you know, Where Is Wendy Williams? It's one of those things that's so frustrating because I could not take my eyes off it, but at the same time, I didn't even want the opportunity to watch it. Like, I don't even think it should have been out there. And there's so much confusion with, you know, because her son was an executive producer, her manager at the time, who we meet in the docuseries, is a part of it. She has the worst PR lady in this that was embarrassing. And it just shows a lady that is going through something, obviously, and we don't know as the audience what it is. Now, they were forced, I think, to come out with her actual diagnosis of aphasia, which is what Bruce Willis struggles with as well, which is a neurological disorder that it makes it, you know, you eventually have an inability to communicate. It's a cognitive, injury in a sense. And I wish that there should have been a huge chyron up before every episode saying, this is the Wendy Williams diagnosis that she is dealing with. This is potentially what you are seeing in this docuseries, because it doesn't have that. And it depends on the audience reading that information. And
so
I don't
true, because
think,
you don't know if she's drunk. You don't know.
That's it. You assume, you're like, is it crack? Is it booze? Yeah, you see booze being a part of it. But now you realize, man, she's probably also chugging away at that stuff to try to deal with whatever is going on. Like, what a scary position that is. And it just goes to show you, no matter how successful or how loved you are, you can still get to that kind of place. And that's why it was like a horror film at times. And I just thought it was demeaning
in
certain
anger?
Ways.
Didn't her anger bother
you?
Oh,
yeah.
It was so uncomfortable to watch.
Oh, and then her coming to L.A., being taken to L.A., the publicist takes her to L.A., you guys, and sneaks her off to L.A., and then puts her in front of a meeting, I think, with like Paramount or NBC Universal, there is no way Wendy should have ever been in that position. Her manager didn't even know about it. And she was like, nope, I'm getting my show back. I'm getting my show back. And you felt, your heart went out to her because you knew she should not be in front of any executives at that point.
Yeah.
And it made me so, like, there was like a little bit of like old time, like that movie Sunset Boulevard, Gloria Swanson in there of like old time of like, I need to get back on the screen, of wanting fans to recognize her. And she is so loved. And I just felt like that is no way to treat people that we love. And even if you're trying to raise awareness, make sure you let the audience know what you're raising awareness for.
Right. Right. I agree with you completely. Okay. Another one in the press, Kate Middleton. So I feel like up until we just saw her, maybe it's her, maybe it's not her in the car, the Weekend at Bernie's thing that you put up was so funny.
Which, by the way, I lost a lot of followers for that.
I did
a bad meme, Weekend at Bernie's, but it was a joke because everybody's saying Kate Middleton's, like, there's so many rumors about, like, is she in a coma? Is she dead? What's going on? And always Buckingham Palace is so tight-lipped on anything that comes out of there. So rumors obviously spread. So I was making a joke about the spread of those rumors about conspiracy theories.
Because
I know people are wild.
People were doing like close-ups on her face and saying it was Pippa, her sister, you know. But like, do you remember the days when Chandra Levy was missing and Nancy Grace and Geraldo ended every show with, "Where is she? Where's Chandra?" And it was like the big, I feel like we are back in that moment and we need a deep dive from Geraldo about where is Kate Middleton? Because I sat at like, when I couldn't fall asleep one night at 2 a.m. and did a deep dive on abdominal surgeries and which ones could potentially keep you in bed for 3 months. And there weren't really any. So I just think it's very odd.
Yeah, of course, it's very odd. And also, in terms of the royal family, their whole bit is to go out and like do public events constantly. So now you only have Prince William as the only person out there doing minimal events. You know, King Charles obviously is dealing with prostate cancer. Camilla Parker Bowles is now not doing public events. And Kate, they said, by the way, Buckingham Palace said Kate would be out until Easter. They said, we were very upfront about that, but it is still interesting. And the royal family, like, that's, you know, that is a precursor to how America treats our celebrities now. There's always been a hyper focus on them, and that has now traveled across the pond to us. And we love any kind of conspiracy theory. We will make the worst thing out of everything. And I think with them just not directly acknowledging that, and that's why they try to throw us a bone with this photo. And yeah, it's a really grainy photo. Backgrid is the one that released that photo. And Backgrid is a photo agency, you guys, that you have to pay attention to. They're the photo agency that the Kardashians use a lot. You know, those are usually prearranged photos. You know, Backgrid isn't just like off there getting sneak attack photos. These are usually prearranged. And also there is...
Was she like driving around in the driveway and they got that photo? Like,
I mean, her mom's in the thing. Like, it is weird. Like, it is the grainiest shot. And it is interesting to think the lengths that both sides will go to, you know, to actually put out some sort of message. So this was supposed to calm everybody's nerves that Kate is still out there, but it just made things worse in a lot of ways. They're like, where's her mole? That doesn't look hurt like her. That's Pippa. That's not. And everybody all of a sudden is a photo expert. And I just, as a fan, sometimes you just want, like, just let something be what it is. Just tell me the truth, what it is. Just, I don't want everything to be a conspiracy theory. Like, we're going into an election year. Let's just stop it right now.
That's right. Right. There's going to be enough of those coming up. Okay. You said something earlier about how people can create really crazy stories just to get some sort of scandal going to be famous. Let's talk about Jax and Brittany for 1 second, because a lot of people are suggesting that they have made this breakup up for their upcoming show. And the thing I want to say about it is, being a mother, and being someone who, I mean, I'm not dating anyone now, but if I was in a relationship with my kid's father, I don't care what show I'm on, I would never take away that us. Do you know what I mean? That is
exactly
the one bond that you really have.
Exactly.
And it opens up DMs to him. So girls will be like, oh, you're single, I'll fuck you. Or, you know, people just don't trust your relationship. And to me, that is the bond that holds you together through all the craziness of being in reality TV. So that's why I believe that it's real. I mean, I never cared about them to begin with. I'm not somebody that's like, oh, I hope they make it, I hope they don't make it. I don't have an opinion. But if they're lying about it, I think they're terrible people. And if they're not lying about it, you know, then that's kind of, you know, this is it's terrible that they've gotten to this point where they've had to break up right before a show comes out.
Well, either way you cut it, like you said, it's sad. Either way, if it's like put on for clicks and for views for their new show that's come out in a couple weeks, well, that's horrible. And if it's real, it's horrible because obviously he cheated or lied again. Yeah. And the thing is, though, people want it to be like, no, it's fake. But I'm like, look at this dude's pattern of behavior on the actual show, Vanderpump Rules. Yeah. He consistently cheated and got caught. That stuff, unfortunately, sometimes doesn't go away, even though he always talks about his beautiful family. My thing was, I was shocked that they were going to come back to reality television in the first place, because why risk your beautiful family? Like, when you have the spotlight on you, you are proven to have not done great things. Why give yourself? And by the way, this is thanks to Scandoval. The reason Jax and Brittany kind of came back the way they did is because the interest of Scandoval. They were able to sell their show that's going to be premiering after Vanderpump Rules. But yes, like, there is a world in which this is how Jax behaves. Now, I was tipped off by a source very close to them the day this broke, or like right before, saying, hey, this is happening, you should check this out. And I said, listen, is this real or is this, just be honest with me? And they said, no, unfortunately, this is 100% real. Now, even saying that, I still don't know when I'm being lied to. Like, who knows how far? Like, I don't know when people are just wanting me to talk about something to, like, you know, but listen, I think all things point to that this is very real. And I just love your audience that are like, who's Jax and Brittany? You guys, they are just a crazy reality show couple. And I think he's gotten himself in hot water again. And it's one of those things, like the tiger doesn't change his stripes, or one of those BS things.
The animal-ish.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple things I mean, we should just touch on briefly, because then I want to get into two things that I do care about, which is Love is Blind and The Traitors. but before that, Kristen Cavallari and her new boyfriend that's, you know, 24. Do you care?
Yeah. I mean, I don't care, but like, good for her. Date that's as young as you want. Like, date is like, Kristen, date is what, like, guys do it all the time. Like, are you kidding me? As long as you're happy. Do I think it's silly? Of course I do. They're like making TikTok videos together. Like, it's a TikToker in a sense. Like, that makes me laugh. But like, follow your bliss, do whatever you want. Guys do it all the time. I don't think there should be any big like hubbub about it. Yeah. Like, that's completely ridiculous.
I think it's great. They both look great. Who cares? I will say.
Yeah. By the way, imagine that, two hot people getting together. Yeah, of course.
Imagine, crazy. But I will say, I was married to somebody who was 10 years younger than me. He was 25. I was 35. And then I had a baby with him. It was a very good, he is a very, one of the best looking guys you've ever seen. The problem with that becomes the role reversal as you get older and life experience. And sometimes a woman, as you get older, you really want to feel like you're taken care of by a man, you know, and it, the age thing does come to play later. I'm not saying they're going to get married, but they're having a lot of fun right now. Good for them.
But that's like Larsa and Marcus, like we talked about earlier. Even if it wasn't Michael Jordan's son, there's still such an age difference that at a certain point you do have to have that conversation. And even if not in the first year, you will start to be very aware of age differences.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the reality of that situation.
The only thing with him is that he comes from money. So money makes up for it a little bit. He may be immature. He might not have a life experience, but when a man can't support you because he's 10 years younger and he's starting his first job, and you're supporting him, it takes a lot of the sexuality out of it. I mean,
no five times a night then.
No, definitely not. okay. Kim and Croy, Brielle is getting engaged to a baseball player, blah. I mean, do we think that they're still getting engaged? I mean, getting married, getting, I mean, not married.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be, together. I mean, Brielle is somebody that we watched grow up on Real Housewives of Atlanta. Yeah. I mean, I think they'll probably get married. Who knows, but that entire family, it also just goes to show you, when kids get raised on reality television, they almost start to make their lives a reality show, even if cameras aren't on them. Okay. So, you know, and they've also seen the pattern of behavior from their own mom and Croy. Like, they've gone through so many relationship hurdles this last year where the cops have been involved, and we'll see if that happens. I mean, I want the best for Brielle, but I mean, that's another thing too, just in regards to Bethany Frankel, of reality stars and what they think they're owed for the rest of their lives, you know, is that they are seem to get to a point where they're dependent on reality shows.
Yes.
And this isn't like,
what are they going to do for a living after? They don't have any
Rachel, this isn't, yeah, this isn't being an accountant. Like, this isn't like you got to make it to retirement age. Reality TV stars need to have a backup career. And that's what gets sad, is when they get in these situations where it seems like they're desperate for money. And that's when you see a lot of crazy behavior happen. And you have to try to understand if it's fake to drive attention to try to get them back on a show, or if it's very real. And with Kim and Croy, I think it's very real because the cops have been involved multiple times now.
Yeah. Yeah. You just mentioned Bethany, and I just want to say my thought on her for 1 second. I think it's so interesting that she almost seems like she's become above everything in the way that now all she does is get on Instagram and talks about meaningless stuff and gives her opinion on it all the time. And not only that, she's always eating. I want to know how she's so skinny when she's always eating this disgusting food. How does that happen?
That's like the funniest thing. Like I literally, I'll have nightmares of just Bethany chewing now because she's just always chewing while she's talking about her opinions. I mean, there's somebody that would love to be Wendy Williams, but I just don't think she has that. And Wendy, I mean, Bethany Frankel, one of the most respected women at one point in reality television. I watched all her spinoffs, and what has happened, you know, with her, and also somebody that's done amazing charity work. But I also wonder just like who she is at the core, because you would think certainly if you are independently wealthy, or if you work so hard that you actually are financially stable, why would you want all of this? Why would you want to go on every day chewing your food, talking about the Royals or Taylor Swift? Why are you doing, like, what hole are you trying to fill in yourself? And that's the other thing that sometimes I get worried about. I get worried about it even with myself. Like, I mean, what hole are we all trying to fill here?
Yeah.
And I think that's the one thing with Bethany. I just sometimes wonder, like, what is this all for? Like, what is the 5-step plan at this point?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of which, Alexis Bellino, is that how you pronounce her? Back on the OC Housewives, dating Shannon's ex, John. Do you think that this is going to be the major storyline? Like, what's going to happen here?
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be interesting to watch on Real Housewives of Orange County, because Shannon Bedore, if you know her as a reality show character, she's a very sensitive person. She's gone through a lot. And I think this is just gross. This guy, John Jansen, you know, was with her. They broke up last season. He seems like he kind of likes the spotlight. And then all of a sudden, Alexis Bellino is coming back onto Real Housewives of Orange County. And all of a sudden, they started dating, which I think at the first was kind of a little bit of, let's see if we can get back on the show. I think it has actually gone into a little bit more of a real relationship, but also it's so gross. Like, imagine that, you guys. Imagine just the torture it would be with an ex, then having to still remain on the show with a new woman, and then kind of putting that out to see if it rattles you. Like, it just is like, I feel like that's what it's there to do. And I just feel, I hope Shannon can withstand this season.
Right. Okay. On another note, Taylor Swift. So now we've seen today that Travis is heading out to Singapore to see her. Here's my
question.
Thank
God. Thank God.
Thank God. Cause they've been apart for a week.
Yeah.
So let me tell you something about Taylor Swift. My daughter, strong army, she's 11, to spend basically $7,000 to take her to see Taylor perform in Philadelphia. You know, by the time I pay for the tickets, the hotel room, getting there, it was the best $7,000 I've ever spent in my life. I don't even know Taylor Swift songs. This is so dumb. I hate going to concerts. I hate groups of people. It was so good, Ryan.
I love that.
I was in tears the whole time watching how happy she was. It actually is going to make me cry right now, because it was one of the best things I've ever done. So I am a fan of Taylor. I'm a fan.
Well, I did not get to see her Eras tour because my mom was sick at the time. And I am going in May to Stockholm to see Taylor Swift. Believe it or not. I'm really, really excited. And I've heard nothing but great things.
Well, you're going to
I'm a Swiftie. I'm not a Swiftie where I go out and buy every different variant of the album, because I sometimes think it's way too much for the fans, what she asked them to go through in terms of purchasing. Yeah. But I'm really excited to see her perform.
You're going to love it. You're going to have the best time. We have a jar in my house that my daughter keeps putting money in, or if I curse, it has to go in there, because she's still trying to get tickets for when Taylor comes to Miami in October. So that's still a daily conversation that we have.
Does she try to rattle you and get you to curse? Like,
yes,
she,
all the time. Yeah, I'm always like, fuck. And she's like, so anyway, but what I wanted to ask you about this is, how do you see this ending? Because she cannot, first of all, I believe in the crabs in the barrel mentality, that, you know, a lot of people get to the top, and when they get to the people push them to the top and help them get to the top. And once they're at the top, people start to pull them down, and no one that is this big has ever remained at the top. Something always pushes them over the cliff, and there is a big fall from grace. So my question is, do you think there's going to be some sort of scandal? Do you think Travis is going to cheat on her and it's going to be a terrible thing? Like, there is going to be some point where something happens because she cannot stay at the top forever.
I was just talking to my friend about that this weekend, that there's not been an artist that is like remained this hot for this long of a period of time. Like you said, usually there will be that, not even a fall from grace, but just a bomb, just like an album that doesn't hit. I think if anything, we might see that because she has a new album coming out, I believe, in April. Mm-hmm. And listen, there's bound to be a bad album in there somewhere. So far, that hasn't happened. Yeah. But most likely what you said is right, is that us men are idiots. Truly. We don't mean to be, but we're idiots. I think there is a world, and this guy seems awesome. This guy seems like he really does love her, appreciate her. But guess what? People that love and appreciate their partners still cheat. They still have really bad, like, guys, we have pudding for brains. Like, I do, if anything, that could be the world in which we're dealing with. But also, I would hope that Travis also realizes you've signed your death warrant, maybe, if that happens. Like, imagine that.
Unless he marries her, he's never getting out of this scot-free.
And I think he's okay with that. But like, I'm listening to Barbara Streisand's autobiography right now, which is like 48 hours long. It's insane. But she's talking about her lovers through the years. And I was just like, just, you know, and she was like insanely popular at a, you know, still insanely popular, but at a certain point, just like what the number one star in the world. And if you cheated on her, you know, and I just think like if this romance is so public, and I think that's one of the things that Taylor likes about it. But also that means we get into a Scandoval type situation. If one thing happens, if this guy opens the wrong DM, you know, there's a certain amount of freedom that he already doesn't have. And he has to give up even more because she is a way bigger star than he is. And he's a pretty damn big star. Mm-hmm. And that is like supernova qualities. And I do think sometimes that can just be exhausting. But people always say that's a PR relationship. And my argument is, any relationship that either of those people are in at this point will be in some aspects a PR relationship, because they just can't have a normal relationship like some of us can. It's going to be PR. Anytime they go out, it's going to be PR. And I think there will be a time where that's going to get old for them. And it'll be interesting to see once this tour ends, which she seems like this is going on for another 6 months at least. And then she's got that new album. I just wonder, like, for her, when is she going to take a break and actually live life? When is, like, I wonder if she's scheduled in, like, okay, this is potentially the year I want to have a kid. This is the year I want to get married, because she seems to be so hyper-focused on her career, which is amazing. But you're right. Everything that goes up will come down. But I also want to see that happen, because I think it would be so amazing in 8 years to see a Taylor Swift comeback. Like, imagine a Taylor Swift comeback. That would be incredible.
That would be incredible. My prediction is going to be middle to end of next year, because her album will have been out for a year. He will have gone through another Super Bowl or whatever, at least their season, by next February, right? So sometime at the end of 2025, middle to end, that's when they can start, you know, getting engaged, being a couple, having a baby, whatever it is. That's my prediction.
But don't you also think, Rachel, there's a little bit of an exhaustion level in terms of, like, even Scandoval, there's a little bit of an exhaustion level sometimes with Taylor Swift, is that like sometimes you're just like, okay, I get it. She has a flu and she's in Singapore right now. I got it. I got the Taylor Swift.
Okay.
Update.
She tripped on the step. Yeah.
Like how many? It gets a little exhausting.
But I will say that video they had when he went to Brazil, I think it was, and she ran off the stage to kiss him. I will tell you that I probably watched that 47 times.
Yes, we want those moments. By the way, I would so much rather good moments like that. I don't care if you think it's conspiracy theory or PR. I would rather watch something lovely instead of watching the same BS cheating and lying on reality shows sometimes. Yeah. That does fill your heart up, and it gives you those little like butterfly flutters. I love that.
Yeah, you're so proud of them, and you're always like, God, I want that moment of running into some guy.
But isn't it funny? I love that we're proud of celebrities. Like, we're like, I'm so proud of you guys. Like, I can't make my rent, but I'm so proud of you guys. Yeah,
exactly. Oh my God, that's funny. Okay. Now we could talk about the real thing I give a shit about, the Traitors.
Oh, my God. I love this show so much.
Have you watched both seasons?
Yes.
Okay. I have begged my PR person. First of all, I don't even hire PR people. I hired a PR person just to beg them to get me on this show. I am obsessed.
Their casting department right now must be just deluged with people yeah. begging to get their clients on this show. That's because right. the first season was good. And by the way, this is obviously is an overseas hit already, but they have made it celebrity and reality show driven. The first season was good. The second season, everything came together. I yeah. cannot wait for Thursday night where we have the finale and then we have the reunion hosted by Andy Cohen right after. And I got to tell you, it is the 1 hour a week where I just become a fan again. And I'm not thinking critically about it. I'm not thinking about how to talk about it on the show. I just become a fan. And it is so, it's a mixture of gameplay, reality shows from all different genres that you grew up with, that you're actually currently watching, complete cheesiness, but it works. A host that gives everything. You, Alan Cumming is one of the best hosts out there. You truly believe people are going to potentially die. Yeah. And it just all, it's magic. The round table discussions where they're going after each other. Phaedra Parks giving the performance of a lifetime. I can't say enough good things about The Traitors.
Who do you think played the best game this season?
Phaedra definitely did not play the best game. She was just the best person in those roundtables. Okay. Like, I think she made a lot of mistakes as a traitor. And even Kate Chastain points that out. I think she did, but man, she was magic at those roundtables. It's a delicate balance because it's like gameplay, but it's also holding yourself back because Pilot Pete from The Bachelor, he got too gregarious with it. He got too into it where he all of a sudden was able to be taken down because they're like, this guy is being insane about this. He might be a traitor. Trishelle played a great game as well, but she's another person that started pushing so hard. I hate to admit this because I don't think it was exciting to watch, but I think you're going to see in this final episode, Sandra from Survivor, I think she actually picks up on something that Kate said at the round table and getting out Phaedra. There's a chance that Sandra might've played the best overall game if she's the one that kept quiet enough.
Yeah.
But also then actually did know what was going on the entire time. Now you have Sheree from Real Housewives of Atlanta. I still don't think she even knows where she's at.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
She could win this whole thing by default and not even know what show she's on, which would be hysterical. But it's one of those things you have to go in there. Like if you make it known your thoughts too much, you all of a sudden have a target on your back. It is this great game that I mean, would you rather be a traitor or a faithful?
You know, I thought about that. I think I would rather be a traitor. Because I just think you have more, like it just gets more interesting and you get more power. Right. And it's hard to be a faithful. You could just end up dead at any given point. You know what I mean? So I thought about it. I think I would want to be a traitor.
But how far did you get with the casting department? How far? I mean, did you ever get any feedback about, your inquiry?
Can't talk about that.
Oh, come on. This could be the clip we can pull. We need, I'm no Mark Garagos, Rachel. Let's give some dirt.
Wait a minute. But you know who else is going to do our show soon? MJ, Mercedes. So we're going to have a whole
Mercedes is doing, I love Mercedes. She is actually a friend of mine and she is, that's the other thing. There are so many comedic moments in these shows. Like Mercedes coming in, like spying in her jeans awkwardly.
Yeah.
That stuff makes me laugh so much. Mercedes is such a great person. I can't wait for you guys
to talk. I'm so glad that she got on the show as well. So, all right. So now Love is Blind. Are you watching this? Do you watch every season?
In fact, yeah. Well, I do, but there's been a lot of bad seasons. This season just happens to be way better. In fact, like as soon as I get off with you, I'm going to go watch the finale of Love is Blind.
Okay, I watched it this morning before I talked to you. I'm not going to give you any spoiler alerts then. But listen, last season I had the exclusive with Uche. He came on my show. And then I had Izzy on here too. So I got the whole rundown.
I've talked to Izzy,
And how it works, which I also think is interesting. I also had my PR guy say that they need to pitch a older version because I would do it. Or like celebrity, you know, not really celebrity, but kind of celebrity version.
You would really do it?
I would do it because I am a sucker for love. I want to be married. I want a witness to my life. And wait, I just want to finish. I do so well on online dating because it's very similar. You have to be able to understand a person's personality before you go on a date. I have so many friends that make a mistake. They look at their picture and they're like, oh, I'm going to meet him Wednesday. I'm like, no, honey, you got to talk to them. You got to see if they give good phone. You got to see if they give text. You got to see. I get to the point where I'm like aching to meet the person and I've never even met them. That's how I know that I'm into someone. And so
yeah,
I
but
think
Rachel, that's
really
so much
well.
Pressure on the initial meeting then, because you built that up so much in your head that you were bound to most of the time be disappointed once you meet them.
You're forgetting that I fell in love with PK. You know this about me, right? I dated PK for a year in my life.
Hello, I'm PK Kemsley. How are you? I forgot about that. Oh,
and
my.
Wait.
You got to promise you'll come on my show. When I dated him. You better come on my show.
I had an accent when I dated PK. and as we all know, PK is not the most attractive guy. I was so in. First of all, it took me a year. I was just friends with him. I was like, I'm not going to date this guy. We were best friends. Out of nowhere, one day, I was like, oh my God, I'm in love with this guy. I really was. And I did not see what he looked like. So I do believe that love can be blind.
PK is very charming, totally. But I'm saying you would put that whole romance thing on screen. That's the thing.
I would
where,
hope that the casting department isn't going to pick a troll, you know, for all the men in there. But yeah, I'm thinking that I would love to do it. I'm putting it out there.
Oh,
to
I bet
casting gods that might.
By
be
the way,
looking.
I'm going to email Netflix today, actually. So this is well. The funny thing about Love Is Blind, though, is that you get so caught up in it, and this is a really good season compared to some of the other seasons. But then you have to remind yourself when you get so heavily invested, you're like, oh, wait, they've only known each other 14 days at this point. Like, you know, when they're like, this is the love of my life and that it doesn't work out. You're like, I feel bad for them. But at the same point, this was like 2 weeks of their life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I've watched the show and I've been dating someone at the not this season, but dating someone for like 4 weeks. And we're watching it. And they're like, I love you so much. I love you so much, baby. And I'm like, oh my God, I barely know this guy's last name. Like it's, you know, it's so uncomfortable.
That's the other docuseries they need of Love Is Blind, of couples and new couples watching Love Is Blind and how that affected their relationship.
Right. That's right. Okay. So I know I've kept you on here forever.
No, this is like the best part of my day is being able to talk to somebody that I haven't talked to before about things that I truly love. And I just think sometimes the audience, I mean, you've had such, like I said, such powerhouse guests that sometimes this might come off a little silly, you guys, but I would say sometimes this is some of the best stuff to actually decompress from your actual lives.
Yeah, I know. I agree. Okay. A couple quick questions though, that I genuinely want to know your answer to. Is there a show that you're watching right now that no one's like talking about that much that you're like, oh my God, this is the hottest show?
You know what? It's mainly things that are not reality shows. Okay. Like, you know, it's like, those are the things. I just watched this Netflix docuseries called American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders. And we had the director on, which is like a 4-part series that just came out last week that I got fascinated with, that I loved. We had the We Are the World, The Greatest Night in Pop documentary
that
was on Netflix that I fell in love with.
Did you have those someone on things. From that?
No, I didn't. You know, okay. I would have the director on, but that's the other thing about pop culture now. Is that it comes out, it's talked about for a week, and then we forget about it.
Yeah.
And so sometimes like pop culture now is moving at such a clip that I would, you know, you have to go back and remind people that these things exist. But it was such a great thing of pop culture at a certain place in time before the internet existed.
Oh my God.
So great.
So everyone has to see that. What's it called again? One Night in...
The Greatest Night in Pop.
The Greatest Night in Pop. And you see Michael Jackson, you see...
Lionel Richie, Billy Joel, Huey Lewis.
You find
out
how We Are the World was written. I mean, it's just an unbelievable documentary. I loved it. I'm going to make my daughter watch it too. One thing I want to tell you about, if you hadn't seen it yet, is American Nightmare. Have you seen that?
Yes, that's another one. That's why I said that came out about a month and a half ago. And I feel
I had
like we should...
the journalist on the one who was getting the letter, the emails from the guy from the kidnapper, and I stalked him. I used to be a journalist. So I found out what network he worked at. It was 5 o'clock in the morning for him, 8 o'clock in the morning for me. I called the newsroom, the news desk. I got his number and then I had him on the next day because I was like, I'm obsessed with this. This is an amazing story. I have to hear, but I loved his perspective because he covered it. You know what I mean? And then became part of the story.
Well, I'm listening to Victim F, the book that American Nightmare was based on, because I wanted to know after watching that documentary, I was like, I want to know everything about this. And that was one of those things I started on a Thursday night after I finished work. And I stayed up watching it because I had to watch another episode after another episode. But those are the things, those documentaries about actual real events, those are the things that kind of are a good palate cleanser for me, even though they're so dark and disturbing that it kind of is like, okay. Those are the things. But in terms of reality TV, it's like I'll go back and watch old seasons of The Real World. I'm watching like the new season of Survivor was pretty good last week. Mm-hmm. Those competition reality shows. I'll be very sad when The Traitors ends this week, and I'll be sad like Love is Blind is over. We're actually, you know, maybe go spend time with your family now, you guys, now that we're starting.
Oh, that's boring. Well, you know, you can always watch my season of Celebrity Rehab, which is on, I think, Amazon Prime.
Rachel, I was just talking about this with somebody of like, we used to live in a day where like Celebrity Rehab was appointment television for me. Like, how sick this was. Like, I remember tuning in week after week thinking this is totally normal. Like, this is totally normal. Very enjoyable TV, Celebrity Rehab. And it was the most intense. I mean, Tom Sizemore. I remember all of these people that were dealing with these really intense problems. And looking back, I'm like, how did that even make it on air?
Yeah. And it was I loved my season. I'm friends with people on other seasons because we kind of had to be sober coaches for each other. It was a real, by the way, people ask me this all the time. Nothing was edited that didn't happen. It was a real show. I like loved being there because it really helped me. I was there for Love Addiction. I was like the most famous person in the world at the moment. So they got me on there first. And I was like, this is stupid. I'm not coming on this show for this. You know, when people are like dying, I had Leif Garrett, who was withdrawing from a heroin addiction. I had, my roommate was Janice Dickinson. I had, you know, Jason, oh my God.
Waller?
Well, Jason Waller was on my show. I had Eric Roberts. But then, you know, two people from my show, there was only eight of us, two people from the show have died of drug overdoses. That's a huge percentage. And, you know, I'm still close with all of them. Well, except for Janice, because she's a little bit hard to stick close to, but I still love her and care about her. I had Jeremy London. Do you remember Jeremy London?
Yeah, of course.
He had said that he was kidnapped, thrown in the back of his car, and they forced him to do drugs. Gotta love that.
But it's like that was on like this, like that was on the same week as Celebrity Fit Club. Like Celebrity Rehab and Celebrity Fit Club should not be on the same network. Like, it's just that's such a bizarre time in VH1 reality TV. It was like either Rock of Love or Celebrity Rehab. And that's like a huge amount of difference in between the two.
Right, right. Okay, lastly, who is there one person in reality TV that is no longer on that you would like to see come back?
This will be sad is, Herman Munster shoes. What's her name? From Real Housewives of New York. Sorry, I'm blanking
Herman
on
Munster
her.
Shoes.
Okay. Sorry. They call it Countess Luann. I'm blanking on the Herman Munster shoes. Oh yeah. Alex McCord. Oh. She was one of the original Real Housewives of New York, but I would only want her if her husband Simon was on with her, because I think they were just so OG and so hysterical. She got picked on so much. And she actually is one of the people that went and did an Ultimate Girls Trip, the one with Brandi Glanville and Caroline Manzo, that will never see the light of day. So she actually did make a return. It will just never probably be seen by an audience. But there was part of me that would love to see where she is now, because she took she was the original Roni cast. And there's part of me that, you know, and her husband was such a goof at the time. He was wearing red leather pants. He was like fighting on housewives blogs with other housewives. He released a celebrity single called I'm Real. I mean, I would love an update on them.
That's a great answer. Okay. And lastly, I would be remiss if I didn't say, do you think that Andy Cohen is planning his exit package, or you think this is water under the bridge for him?
We saw water under the bridge, nor should it be. I mean, there's conversations that should be had. And of course, it's that thing of, you know, there's boundaries and you are like the figurehead. Even if you're not the actual head, you are the mascot. But I don't think, nor do I want to see him go at all. Like, I would be very sad. Like, I do. I'm one of those people that enjoys watching Watch What Happens Live every night. Yeah. I do. Everybody hears stories about Andy Cohen, but it's the same with any kind of, like, you know, it's like Lorne Michaels from SNL. Like, you know, anybody that actually is the head of something, you're going to deal with this. He has a lot of responsibility and he does need to take a hard look at how he interacts with these people, because they all want a piece of him. And, you know, at one point they all want to be friends with him. And then I think at another point they all want to take him down. And that's got to be a really hard thing. But I do not think they're planning his exit package. I don't think they're, you know, I don't think he wants that. And I don't think Bravo wants that. But we'll see where this all plays out. It does seem like that's what Bethany wants. it seems like, and you know, Mark Garagos once again in the paperwork in regards to Brandi Glanville last week, the documentation, they say they want him out, that this is not something that a boss should ever be involved in. If this was another Comcast employee, they would be out immediately. And I don't necessarily believe that, but I believe there's conversations to be had. And I think he has to be truly careful, because at the end of the day, not everybody has his best interests at heart. And he's just at the head of it. So like, man, how many people in this life can say they started something? Like, he started the Real Housewives franchise. It's, you know, people know that term now worldwide. Only a couple of people can say that in this life, that they actually started something that has traveled like that.
Right. But full circle in our conversation, crabs in a barrel, he's gotten to the top of his game. And now you're starting to see the other crabs trying to pull him down. So it'll be interesting to see.
Wait, do you want to see him go?
No, I don't. I mean, listen, I do agree that he's the boss. And if it was anywhere else, he would have been fired without a trial. You know, people have been canceled for much less, especially during the height of the Me Too. I don't think he meant it. I don't think he had any bad intentions. But as the boss, you cannot talk like that. So I think he might get a stern speaking to. But you know, if he left, I think it would ruin the network. So, and I think a lot of these people may be taking advantage of the situation that happened to create, you know, punishment for him because they are angry about what happened to them. So it'll be very,
well, it's very coordinated in how all of this is coming out at once. Yeah. You know, everybody's got to pay attention to when all of this stuff is happening at the same time. And I do believe that is one of their missions, is to take down Andy Cohen in a sense. But I do believe in better mental health, you know, like, let's fight for better pay wages, all of that stuff. Those are conversations to be had.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. So Ryan, where can people find you?
The podcast is called So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. We just switched over to Betches Media. I love them. We've been there for about 4 months now. And go check out the podcast. We do 4 to 5 shows a week. The Instagram account, So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, a lot of silly memes that will potentially offend you, but you might find something you like on there. We've got a Patreon, So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, where I recap the Traitors, Summer House. We have a YouTube channel. There's a whole kit and caboodle, but try it out. There's a lot of guests, recaps. Just pick what looks like it might interest you and give it a shot. But if not, you know, we're in the world of like great podcasts. There's something for everybody. And what I always say to anybody is that, not only for, you know, my show, but this show, slam that 5-star button, rate and review this, because those things really do help placement for any podcast. It doesn't matter if you think, oh, Rachel's already famous, she doesn't need it. No, it helps everybody. You want this to get out to as many people as you can, because at the end of the day, I'm really proud of what I do. And I think you are too. And you really want it to get out to as many people as possible. But other than that, thank you for listening, you guys.
And it's so true what you said, because I read my reviews. I like listening to what people have to
say. Oh, I had to stop. It's a lot. It's a lot.
But I like seeing people's suggestions of guests. I like knowing what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong. But I agree with you. I take this very seriously. I'm very proud of my work. And I'm very honored that you came on my show. So
are you kidding me? You God, I'm telling you, Rachel, you didn't commit to it, but you better come on my show. You better.
I'm coming on your show, and I cannot wait to have you back again to do some more recap.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.